Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my assignment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We talk to him every day at 4 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. The professor, John Clayton, joins us. Hello, John.
Hello, how are you?
Good. I was a little disappointed by those games this weekend. I was telling these guys I was really excited just to camp out on the couch all day, not move, and just lay there and watch football. Didn't really care who won. I just wanted competition. I wanted it to be compelling, and neither game was compelling.
No, I would agree with that because it was pretty one-sided. I mean, San Francisco just rolling up the score, getting a 27-0 lead. I mean, it was a little interesting in the first half, at least with Tennessee getting the lead, but then you saw that for the second straight week, you know, you get a hot quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, and he's just going to beat you down. Yeah, it was a pretty one-sided weekend, I would agree.
Yeah, you know, what do you think, John? I was surprised that, that the Chiefs were favorites. I was just kind of going through their schedule. They lost to Green Bay at home. They were 7-1 on the road, 5-3 at home, kind of like the Seahawks, except Seahawks were 4-4. But, you know, they lost at Tennessee. They had two, I guess, pretty bad losses to the Colts and Texans. But they won it at New England, and then they beat the Ravens at home. So, and then same thing, you know, you look on the other side, the Niners, they lost at Baltimore. They lost to Seattle. I guess Atlanta was their worst loss. Right, that was one that they clearly should have won mm-hmm. at that point. So, who do you like in this one?
KC, because they got the quarterback. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, because you know, you saw that things went pretty predictable. I mean, San Francisco was the better team. They were at home. They were going against Green Bay. Green Bay was handicapped stopping the run and didn't have any weapons to throw to other than say Devontae Adams, and so that was predictable. I mean, you saw that Tennessee, even though they've had such a good record of getting into the red zone and getting touchdowns to a point where they had a kicker, they signed Greg Joseph, who never even had a chance for a field goal attempt, and he was there for more than a month. But if you're going to be going and getting into a scoring shootout with Patrick Mahomes, which is going to be the case, and if that's going to be the case, you're going to have trouble. And that's going to be the same thing I think San Francisco experiences. Even though they're a more complete team, there's no doubt. The KC defense is a little better than I think build. I mean, because of the way they played in the second half of the season. Is it good? No, but it's a little bit better.
John, I watched the NFC Championship game, and obviously the 49ers dominated. But I look at Aaron Rodgers, and I couldn't stop help but thinking, how many more years does this guy have? Threw for 4,000 yards this year, 26 touchdowns. He's 36 years old. He's got a young team around him. How many good years do you think Aaron Rodgers has?
I still think he has three or four. I don't know if, because again, you got certainly Aaron Rodgers playing to he's 40, Tom Brady playing to he's 43, and of course they're going to both continue to play next year. And so Aaron's still in good shape. He still has a good arm. I don't see any arm problems. I just see receivers that just don't get open. And so he has to stand there and just wait for Devontae Adams or maybe Jimmy Graham or maybe Aaron Jones, and that's about it. It's almost the same thing as what we're watching with Tom Brady. I mean, you have nobody to throw to. What are you going to do?
Hey, John, a lot of praise being heaped on that 49ers offense for being innovative and the modernization of offenses and all that. What is it you think they do that's caught everybody, got everybody so excited?
You mean you're talking about Kansas City?
No, I'm talking about the 49ers.
Their run scheme is just sensational. I mean, Kyle Shanahan just has so many varied ways of running similar running plays and having different blocking assignments and different angles that guys can go for. I mean, this is all him. And now we're talking second generation, and I think he's taken it to another level. You know, where you saw, particularly in the Super Bowl year, Doug Peterson take an amazing job with his RPOs and all that stuff. Well, Shanahan's been doing that now for a couple of years, even though he didn't have the opportunity to do it in Atlanta, but he has the ability to put all those things together, and I think he's the best in the game at doing it.
It's kind of interesting because his dad
your buddy.
Yeah. I don't mind him. I mean, I respect him. I don't like the way it ended for me. And I think every player doesn't really care for the coach that he goes out of the league on, but I thought he did a good job. But he gave John Elway a running game, mm-hmm. you know, and that's where John was, 0-3 in Super Bowls coming into that one. And
right. And
then, you know, all of a sudden he gave him a running game, and the value of that, I think, has not been lost on his son.
Mm-hmm. No, he's been, I mean, he's really good. And, of course, I mean, they've still got the same running back coach that's been there forever and, you know, teaching the backs how to do it. And that's the thing that's so amazing. You know, it doesn't matter which back that he has. I mean, and you saw that back in the day with Mike Shanahan. I mean, he could have a back that was drafted in the first round, the second round, the third round, an undrafted guy like Terrell Davis. And, you know, here's, you know, Raheem Mostert, who is able to, you know, rush for over 200 yards, and he's on his seventh team. It doesn't matter if he has Jarrett McKinnon. It doesn't, because they remember they paid $7 million for Jarrett McKinnon, and he's been injured for 2 years, hasn't played a down, and yet, you know, they get Tevin Coleman, he's successful. You know, they get Matt Breida, he's successful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the scheme. And you have to also give credit to the offensive line coach for designing blocking plays that work in that scheme.
I'm trying to remember some of those running backs in Denver. There was a guy named Orlando Gary, I think, that he came in because it was. It went, and I want to say that Terrell Davis was like an 8th or 10th round draft choice or something
like
that.
He was late, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, same type of thing. Hey, really quick, getting back to Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers saying that the window's open for them, and I was going through and looking, okay, so they have, their two tackles are getting old.
Yeah.
Bulaga, is it Bulaga?
Mm-hmm.
And Veldier, both 10-year guys. Aaron's 15 years. Mercedes Lewis, I think, might be down at 14 years, and Jimmy Graham at 10 years. But they have a lot of these guys, like the Smith brothers are in their fifth year. You know, you got the good Blake Martinez, good middle linebacker, 4 years. Yeah, it seems like they do have, you know, other than it looks like they need to go get some offensive tackles, but he makes a good point that that they've got a window open there for a while in Green Bay.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the key was making the defense better, although I'll tell you what, I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be a coordinator change, because, you know, here you have Matt LaFleur as a first-year coach, and he brought Mike Pettine back. All right, so now Mike Pettine hardly made any adjustments yesterday, and, you know, he has a tendency to get too light on the defense and maybe a little bit too cute. And what I mean by light, you know, he's big on using nickel, dime personnel, even in some running situations. I mean, maybe having only one linebacker on the field. And when you have that happening, you know, what happens now is that it's like, okay, you're not big enough. You're not big enough to stop the run. I mean, could you imagine what Green Bay would have had problems with Derrick Henry and that big back? Because, I mean, here's you know, running back that's 25 pounds lighter, just power driving through them. And so, you know, it's you kind of wonder, because, again, you know, they really kind of put things together so they would not allow the long pass, you know, getting better at corners and putting, you know, extra corners out there. But now you're so light. You don't have any big guys. You don't have any Dave Wymans out there to make some stops.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that.
I mean, you have more Bob Steltons, and, you know, Bob Stelton can make the stop. But the problem is he's not big if it's going to be making a big stop on a 225 to 240-pound running back.
That seemed unnecessary.
Well, no, but you notice how I
phrased calling
it.
You a speed guy, Bob.
No, because I was
I don't think he was.
No, I was. I said you were a speed guy. and you notice I did phrase it so it wasn't a rip in saying that, you know, it's not that you wouldn't be able to do it, but it's going to be harder because, I mean, you're a lighter guy. I mean, are you as big as Wyman?
He weighs more than I do.
Yeah,
you're right. He's got that.
Well, you don't want to be. You don't want to weigh as much as Nate Bong.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what happens if you do weigh as much as Dave?
What's that?
Commercial sponsorships.
Yeah.
Ah.
For weight loss.
Yeah, we got to get a little tune-up on 3010 here. I got to admit, just football season, just a little bit. It'll be
is that
10 days
from Thanksgiving. And
10 days, I'll be back. Yeah, it starts around Thanksgiving,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Jimmy Graham, 10-year guy. Did they bring him back? What's going on with him?
I don't think so. I mean, he's making $10 million. They've got to free up some money to sign, you know, Blake Martinez, the inside linebacker. You know, they've got to do some things. They've got to take care of Kenny Clark, their best defensive lineman. And so to pay him $10 million a year, I think he's gone.
Mm.
John, the Seahawks have a good running back core when they're healthy. You got Chris Carson. You got Rashad Penny. There's a guy named Derrick Henry who's going to be on the market. Do you think the Hawks take a good, strong look at this guy?
No. Can't afford him. Going to be $14 million. And if you lose Jadeveon Clowney or you lose Jaron Reed, you lose that compensatory pick. No, it's like they're not. I mean, again, we know 2 years ago they needed bodies because they're, you know, torn up the roster. They got rid of a lot of the Legion of Boom and all that. And so they needed bodies in there. They needed tight end. They needed offensive linemen. They needed all that. And so they waived the chance to get those compensatory picks and, you know, had it as few as only four picks going into, you know, heading into the negotiation before the draft. draft, and of course, then they were able to get the trade for Frank Clark. But now, you know, you've got to pay different guys. You've got to find a way to pay Clowney. You've got to find a way to pay Reed. I mean, you know, at some point here, you've got to save money now for Shaquille Griffin, who ends up going to the Pro Bowl today. And so, no, I don't think you can afford to pay $14 million for a running back. You know, particularly, you have to hope that the running backs that they have, which was a deep, good group, can come back.
Boy, I sure would have loved to have seen the Seahawks in the playoffs with Chris Carson.
Yeah.
Well, and Rashad Penny, for that matter, too. I mean, he was starting to really come on. But, man.
After you saw what they did to the Packers defensive front in this game, gives you a little hope they could have done, well, certainly done more than they did, which was nothing.
Yeah.
With Marshawn and Travis Homer.
But I'll tell you the one thing, and I was saying it earlier today, is that you know what the 49ers proved for all the critics saying that Russell Wilson needs to pass the ball more, wrong. I mean, running the football is so important. I mean, we've now seen 2 years of dusting back into the 70s for offensive game plans. I mean, last year we saw the Patriots go old school and go two backs and just try to run it like that. And now you saw that, you know, Shanahan and even Tennessee ran the football and had great success. And so stick with the formula, just continue to add a little bit to the passing offense just so it's more relevant and you can, you know, get out of binds when you can't run.
Are there any big name free agents you would expect to see the Seahawks be in the mix for?
Pretty much no. No, because again, I tend to doubt if they're going to be able to do that just because, you know, that's not their nature. They're not a team that really likes to go ahead and, you know, venture.
But they do have $60 million, John.
They do have $60 million, but would you rather go into the unknown and sign like an Ezekiel Ansah, or would you rather go into the known and try to get something done with Jadeveon Clowney? Would you want to – I don't know what they pay or would pay Jaron Reed, but you want to do that. No, I think that you stay with the formula because, again, there's more failures in big free agency than success stories. I mean, you've seen – now, I mean, I still think the Jimmy Graham – trade was okay. I mean, it wasn't great because of the patellar tendon injury, but I mean, you saw some of the big moves when you go for the big money. You go for Percy Harvin, that was terrible. I mean, you go for Jimmy Graham, it was okay. I mean, you know, you go for Luke Jokel. I mean, that didn't work out. I mean, there's more unknowns than knowns, and with the unknowns, you just have to beware.
Yeah, somebody wrote SI, Sports Illustrated, what's this guy's name? Corbin Smith. Yeah, he was talking about Chris Jones being one of the big fish, but he's going to get probably $19 million.
Oh, yeah. Can't right? do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't pay a quarterback $35 million, a linebacker, a middle linebacker, $17 million. You know, you know now you have to figure out ultimately if you want to do something in a year or so, a couple years with Quandre Diggs. I mean, you got to kind of watch it because, again, I mean, you're going to be spending and, you know, then at some point you got to start taking care of the 217, 218 class, you know, because those guys will start to come up.
Hey, by the way, Patrick Mahomes, number one in merchandise mm-hmm. sales for jerseys and everything else. Patrick Mahomes is the darling of the NFL.
Well, I'm looking at a thing here on Twitter, John, tweeted out by First Take that says, Max Kellerman says Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback of all time.
Oh, jeez.
Goodness. Listen, I love Patrick Mahomes as much as anybody, but let's not be a prisoner of the moment.
Did Max go to a boxing match and take a couple in the head or something like that?
I didn't hear what he said. I'm just looking at what they wrote, and it's tweeted out from First Take, so mm-hmm. that's obviously he said it. But
well,
we get so wrapped up. You know, a month ago it was Lamar Jackson. Greatest we'd ever seen, greatest season. Mm-hmm. He loses in the playoffs, throws a couple interceptions, fumbles the ball. Okay, they figured him out. Patrick Mahomes, hey, he battled back from a 24-0 deficit, and then he wins again yesterday against the Titans. Best quarterback of all time.
That says it all,
great
John.
When you have a boxing guy making these opinions. Hey, listen, we know he's good, right? We know you can make the argument now he might be the best in football. But to make him the best of all time, yeah, so you're going to stack his 2 years against the 9 Super Bowl trips for Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah, he's got them all beat.
Ding, ding, ding,
Peyton
ding,
who?
Ding.
Tom who? Yeah, Aaron who? Yeah, it's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, let's ding, 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 ding. I think we got him eliminated and knocked out. I mean, let's put it this way. Kellerman went down as fast as McGregor knocked out his guy yesterday.
Oh, look at that. Look at that, huh?
How long was it? 45
40
seconds.
40 seconds.
Did you anybody pony up the pay-per-view money for that?
I saw it. No, I did not, but I did see it. And I told Jim to bet on McGregor, and he bet on Cowboy Cerrone because he liked the odds. So.
Oh, gee, I mean, you took the underdog?
He did.
Oh, my God.
He did. Very un-gym-like,
oh,
I know.
Oh, that's so strange.
Hey, John, this offseason, what position would you say the Hawks should focus on? Where do they need the most help?
D-line. I mean, that D-line and offensive line, you know, the win the battle at the line of scrimmage. Because, I mean, you know, if they don't get Clowney done to a contract extension, they're basically now doing three or four new starters in the defensive line. And you saw how that worked out this past year. You know, they've got to make sure that they take care of the defensive line so that they don't have to give up 25 points a game. Now the next thing is they've got to get better on the offensive line. And, you know, I have this theory. I call it the theory of 150. I learned that back from the late 2000s. You know, when Chicago and Dallas got you know, their offensive lines got old. And so the theory of 150 is when you take the starters that total 150 years of age, then all of a sudden there's a dramatic drop off. And so they're on the verge of, you know, being close to that. You know, that's why I don't think Mike Iupati is going to be back, because he's 33. You know that you know, they'll have to do something at right tackle. You know, Justin Britt's now 29. You got Dwayne Brown, who is 35, and you've got DJ Fluker, who'll be back next year, and what's he, 28, 29. And so, you know, that's why Jamarco Jones, they need him or Phil Haynes to start one of the spots, and they've got to figure out something at the right tackle position.
Hey, do you think they'll do anything in the way of restructuring with Britt, or do something to make it more manageable? Because I keep reading about how much they're going to save if they cut him, but to me, they don't really have. Joey Hunt loved his tenacity, but he's not your guy going forward. He's great depth, but I feel like they need Britt or something the equivalent of. So what do you expect to happen with him?
Yeah, see, I would agree. I think that first off, they need to make sure there's not too much transition on the line. And if you cut Britt, that means you got a new left guard, a new center, and maybe a new right tackle. That's too much. And you can't risk it, because now, I mean, your two of your remaining guys are the older on the team. But, you know, maybe they restructure it because of the ACL. I mean, it's still manageable at $9 million, and they got the cap room to be able to do some things and, you know, again, to get the re-signings in. But then, you know, I think the key is, and I know that talking to Justin after the game the other day, that, you know, he seems to be a little bit ahead of schedule, which is good. But they definitely, I think, need him, because, I mean, you see the difference, because, you know, Joey Hunt's a restricted free agent. I mean, they'll keep him for a year or so and maybe a little bit longer, see if they want to do some kind of a long-term deal. But he's a backup. You know, he's not big. And so when you go against, you know, smaller defensive lines, you're okay. But you go against a big defensive tackle, he has trouble and gets pushed back.
Man, I saw Britt working out the day of the game in Green Bay, and he had like a tank top on, and he's working out. I'm like, from looking at Joey, and then you look at Britt, you go, damn, that guy is huge. And he's got great feet. He really does. He almost tripped one time going out of our little studio down there. And then all of a sudden his feet were just like, beep, 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 beep. I was like, whoa, look at this guy.
Little twinkle toes.
Yeah. I mean, for a big guy, he has great feet. There's an oddball question, John. Bill Ray, and he was the photographer who took the picture of Len Dawson in the halftime locker room with a cigarette and a can of Coke. You remember that picture?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
John, do you remember seeing guys firing up cigarettes in the locker room when you were started out?
I covered Jack Lambert.
Yeah, that's right. He was the smoker, right?
Yeah, he was smoking all the time. And yeah. So, I mean, it's not like smoking Jay. I mean, he was smoke more than smoking Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Could they smoke out on the bench in those days? Like way back, could they sit on the bench and smoke, or they had to
Well, maybe on a couple of teams. On the Raiders, you might have got away with it, because you can get away with about anything on the Raider team. But, yeah. You know, for the most part, no. But, I mean, I know when you get to the hotel, I mean, you can smell the smoke, and you smell it in the locker room, too, you know, back in those days. Now you can't do it, which is a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, Jack Lambert and others would be smoking.
What was his astrological sign again, John?
Feces. And if you know that,
I Michael, laugh every time.
No, to tell you that story. Was it
have you not heard this, Bob?
No.
Oh, John, we got somebody here who doesn't know.
Yes. So
tell the story.
So my, what happened was that, you know, I, in Cleveland, and particularly, you know, Jack Lambert always liked to go into the bar, order a couple drinks, and smoke some cigarettes. And they told Jack, it's like, Jack, you can't do that. I mean, the coaches go into the bar and they have their fun, so you can't do that. So he's sitting at the bar. Girl comes over to him and says, Jack, what sign are you? And he takes a puff in the cigarette, takes a shot out of the drink, and says, feces.
Now, did he do that just to turn her off and get her away, or did he screw it up?
No, it's just him. I mean, it's like he's a funny guy.
He's just grouchy.
Yeah.
He's always grouchy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, mine was, and I'll tell it again, but it was Greg Gaines. Mm-hmm. Greg Gaines, they called him Bullethead because he was the most ferocious player I've ever been around. And as a matter of fact, if you ever look at the play where supposedly Bosworth gets run over, all he did was he didn't put his head on the right side of Bo Jackson. But if you see number 56 come in, and every time he made a tackle, he would try to bring his fist in and punch him, like hoping to get like a gut shot or a rib or whatever. And he had this super hillbilly accent. He was from Tennessee. And so I look in the showers before my very first preseason game, and I knew Greg, and he was good to me, and he'd, you know, been around each other for 4 weeks practice. And I'm looking in the shower where it's dark, and I see this orange light glowing in there. So I walk in there, and there's Gaines in full pads, all taped up, smoking a heater.
Wow.
He's like, "Hey, boy, you ready to go? You ready to go, rookie?" But yeah, that was that was probably the last time I saw that. That started, well, then all of a sudden it became you can't smoke in buildings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And right.
OBJ knows that, right? Odell Beckham Jr., you're not supposed to. That's what the cop was doing there.
No, but what you can do is pay the players.
Yeah,
it's an SEC thing. So
if you're OBJ, you feel like you can do anything. Doesn't matter what the rules are.
I bet you he doesn't get invited back next year to the LSU locker room.
That'd be a shame. What would they do without him? Ogeron would have to do the speech on his own without OBJ popping up in the middle of it yelling. John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. There's the Professor John Clayton with us every day at 4 o'clock. I just looked up that picture of Len Dawson.
Yeah.
Sitting there, he's got looks like a beer. Is that a beer?
I don't know. It might be a bottle of Fresca.
A beer, whatever. Maybe it's a Fresca. He's got the cigarette up to the lips there. A little halftime refreshment.
Yep.
Finely tuned athlete right there.
Yeah.
He looks tiny. He looks like a kicker.
Yeah. Bill Ray was the photographer, and he passed away at age 84.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, so, yeah.
All right. Coming up, there are a lot of former Seahawks in the playoffs this year. Are there any that we wish were still here? Is there a guy you look at and go, that was a mistake to let him go? They should have brought him back. We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore today. Coming up at 5 o'clock, our buddy Brady Henderson from ESPN.com will join us on the program. Wrote a really good piece on KJ Wright and sort of how he gambled on himself this year and the season that he turned in. So we'll talk to him about everything else going on. But, you know, we're watching a lot of the former Seahawks out there, and especially in the postseason, you look at guys like, of course, Frank Clark. You see Richard Sherman. Earl Thomas was there. Jacob Martin, Barkevious Mingo we saw out there. Is there anybody you looked at and just went, you know what, I wish they would have hung on to this guy?
Frank a little bit for me. You know, and Frank, those other guys, it was time for them to go.
Yeah.
It was time for Earl to go. It was time for Richard to go. Who else? Bennett, they traded away.
Yeah, I mean, Coleman wasn't in the playoffs. He's the guy I would point to. I wish we saw
okay,
him.
Yeah. There you go.
He wasn't in the playoffs, but Justin Coleman on this team would have been my first pick of the guys this year that we watched, former Seahawks. Frank Clark didn't have a great year with the Chiefs. In fact, that was being panned out there in Kansas City for a while. He ended up with 8 sacks. He was coming off a 14-sack season. Now, he dealt with some injuries. He missed a couple of games. He played in 14 games. But it's not like he went to Kansas City and just tore it up. Now, he's been pretty prominent in the postseason so far. I don't know if that was a mistake. We've talked about the harmony in this locker room. And yeah, he was becoming a louder voice in there. I'm not saying he was negative or he was divisive, but I felt like he had some of the old guard to him, if you will. And that locker room is so good right now. It is so good.
Yeah, you look at his production, 8 sacks in 14 games. I mean, he'd lead the Hawks in sacks right now.
He'd double their leader.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is what you said, the harmony in the locker room. That was a culture move. The one guy I look at this list that we have in front of us, the one guy that I kind of miss would be J.D. McKissic, because I felt like he did so many little things good. You know, I think he would have helped in that return game. Seeing Tyler Lockett return kicks just scared the crap out of me. Like, I just didn't like it because he's so important to the offense. He wasn't worth the risk. Now, David
Plus,
Moore,
he wasn't good at it this year.
Nah, he
there was very little in the way of really big returns for him.
Yeah, well, his return game is really in the kick return game. Now, the kick return game is like a lost art now.
Yeah, because they're all sailing out the back of the end zone.
I don't think we'll ever see a great kick returner again. But what scared me is just seeing it. Every time he fields a ball, it made me nervous. So seeing J.D. McKissick go, and then I'm with you, Justin Coleman, just because the Hawks struggled at that nickel position. You tried King. Amadi, I think, is going to be good eventually. But I think if you have a guy like Coleman in there now.
Jamar Taylor in there.
Yeah, maybe you win one or two more games.
Yeah, I miss Coleman a lot. The only reason I wouldn't say him is because you're going to have to match that.
Well, and the same's true for Clark. Would you pay Clark that much money that he signed for in Kansas City?
You know, I don't think Frank was a cultural problem. I think he was possibly going to be one, though.
Yeah, that's more my point. I think there was a fear once he got that kind of coin under his belt.
And I think
that he was teetering on that.
They have been kind of watching out for that ever since they brought him in. You know, they thought, well, maybe he is one of these guys. And you never know what's going to happen when you throw, what did he get, 16, 18 million? On the fire, you know, you never know really what happens. And then, you know, the post-game interview that I think we're going to hear later kind of indicates that, he's a little bit more on the unstable side. But, you know, if you look at Frank, though, and where he came from, and I'm not making any excuses for any of the things that he did, but, you know, he, for the most part, since, you know, Michigan, he was okay, you know, and I kind of liked it last year when he said, hey, this isn't Richard's team anymore. This is my team. I like that he said, you know, shut Richard up, but I was like, wait, is it your team, Frank? I'm so sure about that. Yeah. But, yeah, so, yeah, probably
his deal,
Coleman.
$105 million, 63 and a half guaranteed.
Yeah. Now do you look at Coleman and go they should have paid him the $9, $10 million?
Yes.
I mean,
well, I'm wondering
maybe.
How much, and I think I asked you this before. Everybody's complained or just – whether they've complained or just acknowledged, they played base defense. They have those three linebackers out there 90% of the time. Is that out of necessity? They felt like we're better with Kendricks out there in coverage? Or is that because you didn't trust your nickel corner and we're better off in this than bringing in the nickel corner? And if you had Coleman, would they have run their defense a bit differently?
I think it's both. I mean, you look at the first game of the season, Ugo Amadi was out there in the nickel spot. And then they found out real quickly that maybe he's not ready for that, so let's shift towards this base defense. But Michael Kendricks did a great job. And what they like about him is that he sets the edge and he makes open field tackles. Your nickel's not going to set the edge as well as Michael Kendricks does, and he's not really going to make open field tackles. So I think that was their philosophy. They believe in that three-backer set. But after that first game where Ugo kind of had a rough time, I think it kind of reiterated that.
Yeah, I like the way Coleman, for a DB, set the edge. He was good at it, but he's not as good as Kendricks. You know, in the second half of the San Francisco game, this is what I've kind of been wanting for the defense for a while, is that they are more physical and just are going to step up and bloody somebody's nose. And the first play, they ran Kyle Juszczyk on like a lead play right at Michael Kendricks, and he got under him because he was so low, and just he blew him up and actually made the guy trip and redirect. I think it was Mostert, and he ended up, you know, a loss, and that's something that they needed more of. So I didn't see any glaring plays where Kendricks got beat in a one-on-one. On defense, it's about matching up. You got to make sure that you are comfortable with your matchups, and I guess I didn't see him get beat because of matchups problems, you know, where you had need a speedier guy in there. I mean, they're obviously not going to put him out on an edge, but one of the things they did, and we heard this from Bradley McDougal, is that they did run more zone. And so I would say it made them a little bit more predictable when they have three wide receiver sets and Michael Kendricks is on the field, that you're going to be running zone because you don't want to man him up on a wide receiver. I mean, he's good. He's as good as can be, but you don't want that. That's a mismatch. So, but yeah, Coleman, I think that might be the guy, although, you know, if you just had eight more sacks from Frank, you know, that might have been something. But then you're also paying him for the long term. You also probably don't make the Clowney trade. So, and then those two guys that are gone, I do miss those guys. I miss Barkevious Mingo and Jacob Martin. I think Martin is taking a step towards being a good edge rusher, and I like those guys, but you got JD for that trade.
The thing with the Hawks, they pay guys with good personalities or personalities that they like. They take that into account as well. So that's why I think Frank Clark wasn't going to get paid because, I don't think he's a bad person, but he doesn't really fit the mold of this team today as far as personality-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's again, you're looking at his season, and I remember the headlines out there. The conversation is, you know, man, the Chiefs really overpaid for this guy. You're not getting value for your buck. Regular season, he came back toward the end of the season, had a little bit more of an impact. You've really seen it in the postseason. 8 sacks. Somebody texted in, yeah, that's double our sack leader. Well, A, we already said that. B, that's still not a good standard, right? We're talking about the Seahawks being one of the worst pass rushing teams in the NFL, so doubling the sack leader of 4. 8 is worth $105 million. I wouldn't mind having his ability on this line. I wouldn't have wanted the Seahawks to pay that kind of money for him.
No.
So I don't look at that as a big mistake. As much as they did struggle with the pass rush this year and they were in the bottom of every category you could imagine, they certainly could have used the help. But, again, at that price, we'd be looking at, you know, they would have had to cut somewhere else. Somebody else was going to be out of the mix if they committed that kind of money to Frank Clark. And ultimately, if they're able to get Clowney signed to a long-term deal, I feel like he's a more consistent game-in, game-out presence. May not end up with the sack numbers, but we see how often he's disruptive. Frank would have games where he just, sort of like Bruce Irvin, have a really big game, big splash, like, man, this guy's freakish, athletically speaking, and, man, look what he can do. And then it'd feel like you go 2 or 3 games, you wouldn't hear their name. And it felt like Clowney, obviously dealing with injuries, was just a little bit more present, a little bit more consistent in terms of having a disruptive impact.
I'd say also Clowney is one of those guys that if you put the film on, there's lots of times where he doesn't get stats, but he causes others to make plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is your point, you know, the disruption that he causes. I don't think Frank had that quality. Clowney's very special. Frank is too. I mean, look, there's not many quick twitch edge rushers that can just beat somebody off the edge, and Frank's one of them. I mean, those guys are valuable in the NFL, but so is Clowney. So if you keep him, like I said, you probably don't have that. So, yeah, I'm settled on Justin Coleman. What a great,
yeah, you and I are on the same page.
Great,
yeah.
Special team player, too. Oh, my gosh. He was so good. He's one of the best headhunters in the league. Great open field tackle guy.
I wonder if the Patriots were lamenting that. I mean, they let him go essentially for nothing. Seahawks take a flyer on him. We're all kind of like, all right, we'll see what he does. And then he turns into this guy as solid as anybody in that secondary, and you let him go, and you're like, all right, that's too much for a nickel corner. And then you see what he does in Detroit, coupled with the struggles you had here, then you felt like, or at least I felt like, yeah, maybe they should have paid him. Sounded like a lot at the time. Now it feels like it would have been worth it. All right, we were just talking about Frank Clark. He was incredibly fired up talking to James Palmer after the Chiefs' big win yesterday. You'll hear a bit of that when we sweep the dial, coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Past 2 games, each game, 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we weren't going to win the game if we let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards, they call him the best rusher in the league. We're sitting in this home room.
I posted the comments that you said to me, and all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't catch. Everybody on social media saying,
they must not know who I am yet. They're going to find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that KC. Ain't no four-offs. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told them when I got here, this is going to change. Look at this. We're the best in the world.
Go join.
That's the voice of Frank Clark. Pretty fired up. AFC champs and the Kansas City Chiefs go to the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years. Unbelievable.
It's a long time.
Yeah. I'm so torn, man. I'm rooting. I like Andy Reid a lot. I really like Patrick Mahomes. I wish Tyreek Hill was sick or injured or something and just wasn't part of the equation. But there's Frank Clark fired up. I told he did. You give him credit. He talked smack before the game. He didn't say it afterwards. So I'll give him that credit for saying, you know, because Earl Thomas did the same thing, and he got punked. He got punked by Henry in a big way. Made him a lead blocker.
Yeah. Derrick Henry, what do you have? 70 some yards?
67 yards.
Yeah, like I mean, guy averaged. He had 446 yards in the playoffs in 3 games, and only about 70 of them coming against the Chiefs. So, hey, maybe the Chiefs are able to stop the run, and maybe that'll be a better matchup than I think it'll be. But
69 yards on 19 carries. Plus, they got behind, so they had to start throwing.
Yeah. I'll say this, though, like we said about Frank Clark. I mean, there's just – he was always really nice. When we had him on the Thursday show over at the Pearl Bar there, he would turn to the crowd and, like, talk to the crowd. And he would spend – I saw one time there was a little girl that was so excited. She had a 55 jersey on, his jersey. She was so excited that she was, like, crying. And so he sat down on the ground with this little girl. And, you know, how do you not like that? And, you know, he got it so she was laughing and everything. I mean, so he's kind of a – he's an emotional guy. You can tell. And some really good things. And then he had some rough stuff coming in. But you know, we were just talking about would you have signed him and paid him that money. I think what you heard there – what you heard in that interview there – is a little bit of kind of what where the caution was.
Yeah.
You know, if, well, do we want to give him, you know, that much money? But he's everything's been fine with him, right? He's not gotten in trouble.
No.
He said a couple of questionable things on Twitter.
Yeah. I think for the most part, the any negativity surrounding him this year was just his lack of production. And then he got hurt, was dealing with injury, but eight sacks when you pay a guy $105 million, guaranteeing him over $60 million. And they look at eight coming off a year where he had 14. They're going, come on, man.
Well, he missed a few games. So
two games.
Who knows what happened in those two games? Frank Clark is like, I would never do an interview like that, but I bet it was fun to do it. You know, you watch it happen. You're like, man, I wish I had the, you know, what to do that. That's just not in my personality. So I love seeing people do things that I just wouldn't touch.
There's a side of Bumpus deep inside that's that. It's kind of like NASA. When he plays basketball. NASA Chobe, your executive producer for the Seahawks pre- and post-game.
You're just blowing my image of him.
Feels great, baby. God, got it that time. Good job.
Explain the shirt.
Oh, no. So you remember Jimmy had a T-shirt with my face in his locker, and he told everyone I sent it to him. I got this in my locker the same day. I just didn't show you guys because I was saving it for a special occasion. So I think it's pretty good. You even signed it.
That's the voice of George Kittle wearing a T-shirt featuring Jimmy Garoppolo in his underwear. Did you see it?
I did see that.
Yeah.
And Jimmy G signed it for him, too.
Signed it for him. And then he was doing an on-camera interview with somebody. Might have been SportsCenter or somebody. But they said, I can't take my eyes off this shirt you're wearing. This guy in his underwear. And he, like, took something up and held it in front of it. Like, okay, there.
Yeah.
Now you just see the top.
Yeah, it was, like, from the waist down.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy G's kind of a, you know... model type of
the guy. Ladies love him.
Yeah.
Ladies love Jimmy G.
Really, really good looking, apparently.
That's what I hear.
That's what they're saying.
That's what DJ tells me.
Why is he going to throw you under the bus? Oh,
that's Jim. Jim speaks highly of
Does he?
More, yeah. He speaks highly of Jimmy G.
Is he? He's a big fan, is he? Maybe we should get him one of those shirts. Now.
Maybe he's just too good looking to win the Super Bowl, maybe. I don't know.
About as clean and decisive a first round as you could ever get. You hurt him in the clinch with your shoulder. Is this something that you've worked on?
Yeah, I change levels with it and come up into it, so it's a good shot.
Conor McGregor after a 40-second destruction of Donald Cowboy Cerrone. Big night for the UFC, huge pay-per-view numbers. Conor still box office, whether you love him or hate him. People tune in to see this guy. And then immediately afterwards, Floyd Mayweather's out there tweeting fake promo posters of the rematch between Floyd and Conor, which I do not want to see. Unless Floyd wants to come over to MMA, I'll pay whatever you want for that. He'll take a life-changing beating in the cage.
Yeah, so that's what happened last time, right? It became a boxing thing.
Yeah, it was on his terms in his sport. And he's you know, he's kind of teased that he would do MMA and he'd get in the cage. He knows better.
Yeah.
He may be a dope, but he's not stupid.
Nah, he knows better. You don't get in that octagon unless you got a Swiss Army knife of moves on you. And that's just not what he does. He throws his hands. So asking him to start kicking and grappling and stuff at the age of, what, 40-something he is? I mean, it's...
If he doesn't run that fight last 90 seconds.
Yeah, he is who he is at this point. He ain't getting that octagon.
I wish he would, though.
Yeah, I'd like to see
it. Oh, boy, would I love to see him take a beating. Ugh. But, yeah, Connor's back, and we'll see. Maybe he'll fight your guy next, Jorge Masvidal.
Oh, love that guy. You interviewed McGregor down at the Super Bowl.
Super
Bowl 49.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he came on our show too. He was a nice guy, super well dressed.
Very very thoughtful with his answers, very friendly. He's gone through some turmoil out of the cage recently. Seems as though he's been humbled a bit, like he's taking his career more seriously, at least in the aftermath of this fight. We'll see what goes on, but very good for the sport when he's doing good things. So there you go. Big weekend for the UFC. Meanwhile, KJ Wright had a heck of a football season, and he gambled on himself to a certain extent. I told you about a good piece written by our buddy Brady Henderson of ESPN.com. He's going to join us next here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Jim Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.